Valtos, first of the Reform Lords. That was how the man loved to be known. The gewgaw he preened himself on. A bauble he'd earned by voting to abolish its very significance, yet still liked to play with, to turn over in his hands, to flash. What a shit, the assassin thought. What a prick. That wasn't the reason for killing him, but it certainly made it easier to contemplate. As the ferry visited its various stages, the number of passengers increased. The assassin shifted the bag from across his knees and propped it in front of him, earning a nod and a grateful smile from the woman who sat down on the bench beside him. At Circular Quay, he carried the bag off, and after clearing the pier, he squatted and opened the bag. With a few quick movements, he assembled the collapsible bicycle inside, folded and zipped the bag to stash size, and clipped the bag under the saddle. Then he mounted the cycle and rode away to the left, around the harbor, and up the long zigzag slope to Potts Point. There was no reason for unease. Angus Cameron sat on a wicker chair on a hotel room balcony overlooking Sydney Harbor. On the small round table in front of him, an Islay malt and a Havana Panatella awaited his celebration. The air was warm, his clothing loose and fresh. Thousands of fruit bats labored across the dusk sky, from their daytime roost in the botanic gardens to their nighttime feeding grounds. From three stories below, the vehicle sounds and voices of the street carried no warnings. Nothing was wrong. And yet something was wrong. Angus tipped back in his chair and closed his eyes. He summoned headlines and charts, local and global, public and personal, business and politics. The warm war between the great power blocks, EU, Russia, PRC versus FUS, Japan, India, Brazil, going on as usual. Diplomacy in Australasia, insurgency in Africa. Nothing to worry about there. Situation, as they say, nominal. Angus blinked away the images and shook his head. He stood up and stepped back into the room and paced around. He spread his fingers wide and waved his hands about, rotating his wrists as he did so. Nothing. Not a tickle. Satisfied that the room was secure, he returned to his balcony seat. The time was 8:15. Angus toyed with his Zippo and the glass, and with the thought of lighting up, of taking a sip. He felt oddly, as if that would be bad luck. It was a quite distinct feeling from the deeper unease and easier to dismiss. Nevertheless, he waited. 10 minutes to go. At 8:08, his right ear started ringing. He flicked his earlobe. "Yes," he said. His sister's avatar appeared in the corner of his eye, calling from Manchester, England, EU. Local time, 07:52.
"Oh, hello, Catriona," he said.
The avatar fleshed, morphing from a cartoon to a woman in her mid-30s, a few years younger than him, sitting insubstantially across from him, his little sister looking distracted. At least, he guessed she was. They hadn't spoken for 5 months, but she didn't normally make calls with her face unwashed and hair unkempt. "Hi, Angus," Catriona said. She frowned.
"I know this is maybe a bit paranoid, but is this call secure?"
"Totally," said Angus.
Unlike Catriona, he had a firm technical grasp on the mechanism of cortical calls. The uniqueness of each brain's encoding of sensory impulses, adding a further layer of impenetrable encryption to the cryptographic algorithms routinely applied. A uniquely encoded thought struck him.
"Apart from someone lip-reading me, I guess."
He cupped his hand around his mouth.
"Okay."
Catriona looked more irritated than reassured by this demonstrative caution.
"Okay," she said. She took a deep breath. "I'm very dubious about the next release of the upgrade, Angus. It has at least one mitochondria module that's not documented at all."
"That's impossible," cried Angus, shocked.
"It'd never get through." "It's got this far," said Catriona. "No record of testing either. I keep objecting, and I keep getting told it's being dealt with, or it's not important, or otherwise fobbed off. The release goes live in a month, Angus,